Welcome to Vicious Whispers with Mark Tullius, your source for horror, sci-fi, suspense, and all things violent.
Hey, what's up, guys? Thank you so much for joining me today on Vicious Whispers with Mark Tullius. Today we have episode 59. At the end of the episode, I will be sharing chapter 6 of the Ain't No Messiah audiobook. If you haven't listened to those chapters yet, make sure you go back to the past episodes and check them out. That audiobook is still under review with ACX. I'm not sure if it's taking longer than usual. Wouldn't be surprised with everything going on. But hopefully that'll be out now. But since you're a loyal fan, listener, all that good stuff, you can check it out here for free. I'm not sure how many chapters there are. I think there's like 25. I don't even remember. Man, I'm messing with so many books right now. It's so hard to keep shit straight sometimes. But that's cool. So that one should be out pretty soon. I'm also waiting for the finished audio for Untold Mayhem. A lot of cool reviews are coming out on that one. That book is actually doing better than I had expected it to. There are some people that don't care for the stories. They say it's a little too predictable. I agree. Some of them definitely are. But a lot of people are really enjoying it, giving it 5 stars, 4 stars. So that one, that's for the print book and the ebook. But that audiobook should be done fairly soon. It was supposed to be finished, I think, by the end of April or May. That's the one we're doing a multicast for, and because there's so many different authors, narrators, not everyone can get it all done. But I'm hoping that will be done soon. Unlocking the Cage right now is going through its review on Findaway. I'm doing Try Not to Die, Ain't No Messiah, and Untold Mayhem on ACX, but I'm doing Findaway for Unlocking the Cage. We'll see how it does on there. So that is what's happening with all those. Try Not to Die in Brightside. The narrator needed a little bit more time. She's been sick, so she can't record during that, and it's harder for her to get to the studio and all that stuff. So I told her no expectations, no real deadline. Hopefully she'll have it to me. Who knows? Maybe it's going to be June or so. But again, I have so many different projects coming out, it doesn't matter. And that's what I have to keep reminding myself about, because right now it's super easy to get bummed out that I am not really creating much. Yesterday, what I got done with Beyond Brightside is pretty pitiful. I think I had maybe 15 to 20 minutes of time to write. And so I pretty much did this. So each of those things might be like, okay, a little note to myself to show a character or show an action or add something there, add a line. So it took me probably about 20 minutes just to work on one page. My brain's just been on all these other projects, all the Try Not to Dies. So it's been very difficult to do my own stuff. One day this weekend, though, I think I had about 3 hours to write. And I got a lot done with Brightside, Beyond Brightside. So it's moving forward, but I can't be hard on myself when there are days where I'm only getting a couple pages done. I guess for me, it's pretty... I put a lot of... I don't want to say pressure, but I do feel that need to create, and I want to see my projects getting finished. So Beyond Brightside, I'm excited about it. I'm finally at the stage where I am ready to design the cover. So I'm not exactly sure what it's going to be yet. I know it's going to be one of 3 locations. I'm going to run all 3 of those by my family, see what they think is coolest. And then the final 2 choices, I'll probably give it to my graphic design guy, my artist, and see what he comes up with, the same guy that did Beyond, that did Brightside. So I'm excited about that. That should be cool. Very excited about all the Try Not to Dies. As much time as they might be, or as much brain power as they take, it's cool. I'm excited. Steve Montgomery's is flying. We had a great talk the other day, about an hour long, going over what he's done. And so he's already passed like 10,000 words. Has almost all of it plotted out. It's exciting. It's going to be fun. Smart book. Plus they get high. So that's going to be cool. John Palisano, he just got back to me. I think he's at about 30,000 words. So that's great. That's going to be done in no time. The other ones are probably going to take a little bit longer. I'm not going to be pushing 25 perfect days at all. Like, I might jump around. I had a good discussion with my daughter the other day on what exactly we were going to do with it and what the overall story was. But for now, I think we're just gonna set that to the side because I just don't have the time or the brain power. Because in addition to all this, I've been trying to develop a cartoon idea. It's definitely changed shape over the last couple weeks, and now I think we have it. But even with that, I realized, I told my friend, I was like, man, I was like, I just don't have the ability to even think about it, you know, and, or to try to figure out like the best approach and how we want to do it. Which is strange for me because usually I can get that right away, whether it's a book or whatever. Like I can get the idea, I can concentrate on it, I could develop it, I can make it big. But with this, I think there are so many different variables, something different out of my comfort zone, plus just my brain going everywhere. It was too difficult. But today we had an awesome talk. I think we got a lot done. But I also told him, I was like, hey man, this right now for me is the last priority. First, it's my family, and this, the trying not to die, it's my writing. Then we got the comic. The comic might be a really good idea. It might be a complete waste of time, but it's kind of fun. He's helped me with so many different projects. I feel I kind of owe it to him to go on this one with him. So we will see what happens with that. Besides that, it's been hanging out with the family a bunch, swimming a bunch. Can't complain. It's been good. And that's the thing. That's why I don't even like saying anything about, you know, bitching about not having the time to write, especially when I do have time to do all these other things. So I'm incredibly grateful. I don't want to be bitching or complaining. Just letting you know what's up and why my writing might be a little delayed. Besides being overwhelmed as being one of the reasons I probably wasn't able to think about the comic was I think I was doing too much brain training. Last week we picked it up to 2 days a week. I'm doing the remote training at home. Check this out. I get to wear, oh, here it is. I get to wear this cool thing on my forehead. It looks super cool. Now I need to go out in public. It has a little electrode put on my head, wear it, do the episode. Like it's 15 minutes of brain training. Super easy. Just watch a video. And so I had been doing that, I think, for a couple of weeks, just once a day. Last week they picked me up. We picked it up to twice a day. And I realized they asked me how I was feeling, like 3 days in, I think, and how my mood was. And I realized I'd been pretty irritated, or just more likely to get irritated. It took a lot less to upset me. And so they said that could definitely be a direct cause. I was just overworking my brain. And so we laid off, we backed off. We just went down to once a day. Now I'm feeling good again. So that's what I'm doing. This week, we're going to stay at once a day until we feel like it's ready to go to the next level. But yeah, so been doing the brain training. But besides that, not a whole lot else. Just trying to get through each day, make sure each day is a fun one, do some cool stuff with the family, grow a little bit closer. May have some cool conversations with friends online and all that sort of stuff. But other than that, same old shit, man. So hopefully you guys are staying healthy, staying well, staying active, using your brain, and not worrying too much about all this craziness in the world. All right, guys, listen to some my craziness now. Let's go into Ain't No Messiah, Chapter 6. All right, talk to you next week. Peace.
Chapter 6. The day had been a long one, and I was sitting at my table half asleep, doodling dead people in my notebook, thanking God that Mother never called on me. The dead people were riding waves, being blasted into buildings, sucked out to sea. So much life wiped out by an uncontrollable force of nature. Sometimes I didn't know when the disaster and the footage I was watching had taken place, but I knew this tsunami had just happened. Over the last year, we'd nearly caught up on all major disasters, so Father was always amped up when something big came in. I had to pay attention during my atonement because Father always quizzed me on the content. Unlike the tests we took in school that Mother never handed me back, Father didn't tolerate wrong answers. I took in every heartbreaking moment, all the deaths I was responsible for, all because these people wouldn't believe in me. Because I failed to give them a reason. I wish I'd kept track of just how many people I'd seen perish. Children holding machine guns half as big as their bodies. Fires in factories, mass graves. Workers picking up dead kids by their legs and stuffing them into black bags. explosions tearing buildings in half, fires in apartments, bodies on a dirt road rotting into puddles, flattened by vehicles. Fires scorching out families, white kids my size hunting down classmates, children crying, starving, bleeding, covered in flies, death and decay, destruction and debris. But there was something else I was paying attention to. Huntsville was nothing, a tiny little town compared to all the places I'd now seen from around the world. Gigantic cities where you're surrounded by strangers, just another bit of the blur. Not like here, where my entire world was a house and a church, and everyone for miles had heard my name. I drew another dozen dead and looked up to pretend I was listening. This last part of the day always took forever, Paul pausing after every word, each one said precisely, just like Father. Also, Warren and Tamara could write it down. The siblings had joined the church after the tree incident, and both were stuck with me at the back table, but I hadn't said more than a couple of words to either one. Warren, who sat to my right, was a year below Paul. He held his pencil in his fist and pressed his block letters down so hard sometimes they went through the paper. All I really knew about him was he'd like not having to take the half-hour bus ride to school each day, and he wished his daddy to hell for leaving them. Tamara, who was on the other side of Warren, just turned 13, like me, only she thought she knew it all instead of nothing. When Mother wasn't around, Tamara talked to anyone who'd listen, but only about the real world, how what we had wasn't it. She swore she wouldn't be with us long, but this was the second year I'd heard her saying that same thing. Mother and her favorite four were at her table, Paul sharing Mother's updated Lost Gospels, because Father had only printed four for the school. Paul sat upright at the end of the table, his eyes closed, because he had this part memorized. He savored each sentence. Jesus looked down at the carnage, broken wings and bits of bone floating in the lake. All the demons were dead. Jesus didn't bother looking up. There'd be more. This was hell. The story went on. The confrontation with the doubting Thomas, who had transformed into his real form, a wretched demon. Jesus rammed his sword through Thomas's throat, removing his head with a flick of his wrist. Mother was staring at me, shaking her head. Not one quick shake, like she just made a mistake. She kept shaking it super slow, back and forth, like she couldn't believe how stupid she'd been. Maybe it was the lack of sleep from the nightmares, but I didn't look away. Paul preached about Jesus fighting to the cell James was kept. I could barely follow, all my attention on Mother, the scream building in my chest, bubbling in my throat. I didn't care we were in church. I wanted to yell that not everything was my fault. The phone rang and Mother was on her feet. She told Paul to continue and then hurried inside. Her shadow was a dark shape on the other side of the red window when she said hello. I tried to hear what she was saying, but Paul was talking too loud. The phone slammed down and Mother said, "Damn it! What next?" Paul stopped talking, everything silent except Mother stomping about the kitchen, muttering something about a piece of crap. Her shape filled the window when she shouted, "Finish the lesson! I'm getting your father!" Paul kept reading. By the time the screen door banged shut, Paul was at the part where the grand demon, three times the size of Jesus, flew on the path and blocked his way. Tamara said, "Can you please slow down?" Paul said, "Sorry," he got excited. David said, "Don't you want to go?" Paul looked to me, so I gave him a nod to finish. He hurried through the confrontation, Jesus cutting down the demon in four strokes, saving James from the falling body. David shook his head and mumbled, "Yeah, right." Paul said, "Is something wrong?" David leaned close to Patricia and whispered something that made her giggle. Paul sounded just like Mother when he said, "What did you say?" When David turned to Paul, I could see the thin mustache I wanted to tear off. He said, "My ass, four swings." Paul pointed at the book in front of David. "You're calling this a lie?" "I'm saying no way he cut it down in four swings." David was 7 years older and at least 50 pounds heavier than Paul, but Paul didn't seem to notice when he pointed to the first row pew where he and Mother sat every Sunday. "Where do you think that came from?" "That doesn't mean anything." Paul's cheeks were getting red. "How about the pictures?" "It shows a fallen tree. There's no video, no proof of him cutting it down. I was there. I would have been squished if Joshua hadn't saved me. You're his brother. You have to say it. I didn't like where this was headed, so I said, class is over. Paul looked at me like I'd said the wrong thing, but he went along with it and told everyone to rise. When Paul said the closing prayer, David stood silent. Paul asked him, are you a non-believer? I didn't say that. I'm just saying I bet he can't do it again. David turned to look at me. Not with four strokes, not with someone around to watch. I thought maybe now there was a chance I could do it in 10 or 15, but four was obviously out of the question. I never understood why Father had to exaggerate, but so it'd been written, so it'd been done. Four swings was the official story, and neither Paul nor I could refute it, so I said, don't you ever call my father a liar. Everyone turned me all wide-eyed. David didn't say anything, and I gave him plenty of time. He was an inch or two taller, but that was about it. No question which of us was stronger. I knew without a doubt that if he had said one word, I was going to hurt him. I knew what God did to those who didn't believe. Why should it be any different for me? Hurt first. What's good enough for my father was good enough for me. David said, this is dumb. He snatched his book off the table and left the room. It was Paul's turn to take control. That's enough, he said. Everyone out. When we got outside, I told Paul I could use some help clearing graffiti, but he ran up the porch. After Mother gets home, the screen door slammed shut behind him. I shook out my size 12 tennis sneakers I'd worn the last year. They looked like sandals because I'd cut open the front so my toes could stick out. Mother had permitted it since Paul would probably never grow into them. I didn't want Paul with me anyhow. I wanted to be alone. I was thinking how good it would feel to climb another tree. There was a tall one by the driveway that would be perfect. I thought it'd be funny if I happened to slip from way up there right when Mother and Father were pulling in for my face to explode all over their windshield. I looked up at the blue sky for the answer that'd never be there, the voice I'd never hear. Then over our rooftop, there was a flash of red and yellow, a giant butterfly kite flying through the air, the most glorious thing I'd ever seen. The wind whipped past me, the butterfly soaring higher. If I was ever going to have a sign, I figured this had to be it. My shoes were all muddy, each step a wet squelch, but I had to get closer. The barn door was cracked open, but the sun shining the wrong way, keeping the inside hidden in shadow. I wanted to see in there, but not right then because the butterfly was back, lifting into the air, swaying lower and lower, dipping below the tips of the pines, then up again, one loop, then two, flashing its beautiful red wings for all to see. Right past the barn was the thick line of trees and sturdy rock wall we were never to cross. I paid it no mind and had taken a dozen steps when something swooshed through the branches above. I figured it had to be some kind of bird and continued on. After a few more trees, I caught glimpses of grass. There was another swoosh, something speeding through the leaves and smacking the ground a few feet to my right. It looked like the shortest arrow until I pulled it out of the muck and saw it could go all the way through me. There were four tiny nails jutting out from the razor-sharp arrowhead. I heard the softest giggle and had to get closer. I stayed behind the thickest trees until I reached the edge. The butterfly kite was less than a rock's throw away, the string attached to it now visible. It was the same girl as last time holding the spool. I'd only seen her that once, but I remembered that laugh. That was her smile. Her white shorts and matching shirt were so tight that in the bright light it was nearly like she was naked. She was beaming bright, looking up at the kite the way Mother looked at Paul. A gust of wind blew her long brown hair behind. There was a soft twang and then a rip as the middle of the butterfly shot out its back, the body crashing straight down. The girl fell to her knees and sobbed. The arrow whistled down and I jumped back, covered my head with both arms. It struck the ground right where I'd been standing, pieces of kite stuck in the nails. The archer was on the porch, standing proud, bow in one hand, arrow in the other. Frank, the one who had called me a faggot. The girl picked up the broken butterfly and clutched it to her chest, her face pure anguish. Why? She cried. Why? I did something I'd never done before and spoke up. Spoke up as loud as I could. Why'd you go and do that for? The guy who looked like a poorly disguised demon turned toward me. What the hell are you doing? The girl stood, the battered butterfly forgotten by her feet. She wiped tears off her cheeks and turned to him. I don't think he knew. The other boy, Jeremy, with hair past his shoulders, was over by the garage. He had a huge silver camera up on his shoulder, just like the Fremonts brought for their baptism. He shouted, cut! The ugly guy yelled and I ruined it. Jeremy headed over and said, relax, Frank, I got the shot. Yeah, and this idiot yelling. Jeremy kept coming, his camera aimed at my shoes, dripping with mud, my toes poking through them. I'm adding music to the whole thing, he said. Don't worry about it. That shot was perfect, Frank looked at me and said. You got any idea how many times it took? At least three. Are you fucking with me? I didn't like the way he was gripping the bow, how his forearm muscle bulged. I did the same with the arrow. Felt it about to snap. Jeremy stopped a few feet in front of me and turned to his friend. Go on home and let me take care of it. He's the homo who made me lose that race. What the hell are you doing sneaking around? I'm not a homo. I said, leave him alone. He's my neighbor. Are you serious? Frank threw the bow onto the grass and dropped his arrow onto the porch. Fine. You two can suck each other off for all I care. Jeremy bent over and pulled the arrow from the ground, spread out the punctured piece of kite. He left his camera on it for a second or two before turning it off and holding it at his side. Sorry about that. Frank can be a real dick sometimes. That's okay. He stuck out his hand and introduced himself and his sister. I started to say my name, but he stopped me. I know who you are. Everyone around here does. That's what I've been told. Danielle walked up beside him and gave a little wave, her shirt doing nothing to hide her chest bouncing, no thick bra keeping everything in place. I wasn't really crying, but thanks. I looked down and said I was sorry. Jeremy tapped the camera. So what do you think? Should be pretty tight, right? I had no idea what he was talking about and didn't think I could play it off. What? The video. It's from my art class. I'm calling this piece Life. We don't do that, art. Both Jeremy and Danielle nodded, but neither looked surprised. Jeremy asked, you guys going to learn about everything or just religion? I guess everything, but I don't know for sure. Jeremy brought the camera up to his shoulder, his voice all deep and rich. So is it true, the things they say about you, are you the second coming of Christ? I'm not sure how long I stood there, the red dot blinking, Danielle watching me right next to her brother. He was looking for a one-word answer, and my not knowing would take thousands. Jeremy said, so what's it going to be? Her eyes were on me, and I had to say something. Everyone says I am. You don't sound so sure. My sad little face was reflected in the camera's black circle, my dented forehead, crooked nose, uncombed hair. He said, that just seems like something you'd either know or don't know. Can't imagine Clark Kent ever doubting he was Superman. Who? Jeremy lowered the camera. Are you fucking serious? Superman? You never heard of him? I shook my head and tried not to hear Danielle's giggle the way it sounded aimed at me. He went back to filming. What about Spider-Man? Shake. Batman. Shake. The Hulk. How about the Terminator? Gladiator? Lord of the Rings? Danielle had stopped laughing, her smile no longer there. I finally asked Jeremy, can you turn that off? Got to answer the question first. Are you or aren't you him? Danielle said, say no comment. Her eyes matched the sky with a softness that said I could just trust her. Just say it. Jeremy told her to keep quiet. I said, no comment. Jeremy turned off the camera. Fair enough. Then he kicked Danielle in her butt hard enough to make her jump. Remember what I said. Danielle lowered her head. Sorry. Jeremy handed her the camera. Go put this in my room. Mess with it and I'll break your jaw. Make sure you never get a boyfriend. Danielle ran up the steps and disappeared into the house. Part of me wanted her to come back. The other part was fine never looking stupid in front of her again. Sorry if I upset you, Jeremy said. Just acting, you know. I'm going to be a big-time producer one day. Producer? What's that? Jeremy clapped me on the shoulder. Holy shit, you got some catching up to do. Danielle burst out the door and down the steps, stayed half a step behind Jeremy. He asked, So what do you want to do, Josh? No one ever called me that, but I liked it. I shrugged my shoulders. You sure don't talk much, do you? Only when I need to. My parents have a thing about that. Man, what it sounds like you need is some TV. I'd say we'd watch some, but my mom's in there stinking up the place. Danielle started back toward the door. She won't care. She'll want to meet you. Jeremy ordered her down. You ain't bugging her. Maybe I should go, I said. Nah, man, don't worry about my mom. She don't give a shit what we do as long as we stay out of her hair. Jeremy's blue bike was laying on the gravel driveway. I pointed at it and said, is that hard to do? Riding a bike? He shook his head. Nah, not at all. You've never been on one? Uh-uh. Danielle, get him yours. She ran off to the garage and Jeremy got on his. Ain't every day you get to meet Christ and teach him how to ride a bike. He was showing me which lever did the brakes when Danielle came rolling around the corner on the hot pink bike, hands forward, her boobs hanging down. Jeremy must have thought I was staring at the color. Hers is better to learn on, trust me. I do. Danielle stepped off her bike and held it still for me. Get on, she said. I swung my leg over the big banana seat. I put my left foot up on the pedal and kept my weight on the right, just like Jeremy. He showed me how to balance with both feet off the ground. I tried again and again with no success. Danielle put her hands on my hips and steadied me, the kindest hands I ever felt. Her perfume smelled like peaches and her voice was just as sweet. Try to relax. Ah, ain't that cute, Jeremy said. Now let's ride. He slammed his foot down on the pedal and took off down the driveway. I wanted nothing more than to stay right where I was, leave her hands on me, but I had to follow. I pushed down hard on the pedal and held the handles tight. I started to tip, but Daniel corrected me, running alongside as I pushed down. Faster and faster. The faster I went, the easier it got. The bike nearly standing up on its own, even when Danielle let go with a final push. She cheered, "You're doing it!" And I was, pedaling the pain right out of my knees, the wind blowing my hair, mud spattering my back. Jeremy barely had to turn his head to see me. "Good job, man. We're headed left." Left was a small dirt road leading to town. If anyone from church spotted me, I'd be a dead man. My legs were on fire, but I kept pedaling like a maniac and swung past Jeremy as we headed for the top of the hill where the road became concrete. He sounded kind of nervous when he shouted, "Get on this side!" I swerved onto his side of the yellow line I hadn't noticed before. I matched his every stroke. "Better slow down," he said, but I wasn't slowing down. The freedom was incredible. The hill was steeper than I thought it'd be, and I was already flying. My feet flew off the pedals. I struggled to get them back on, pinched the seat between my thighs. I pulled on the brake levers, but nothing happened. Jeremy shouted, "Fuck it, it's all clogged!" I held on tight, squeezing the brakes, my arms shaking, sidewalk and houses whizzing by. There was a green light at the bottom of the hill where our road met a street going across it. Our street ended at the T, where there was a lush lawn in front of a massive white building with the huge cross on top of it. Jeremy kept yelling, "Bail! Bail!" In a blink, I was at the intersection holding the handles tight, a praying to God like never before. The light had been green, turned red, and the cars waiting on Main Street started moving. There was no deciding, nothing to do but hold on tight. All sound was gone, time like molasses. A red pickup missing me by a few feet. My front tire hit the curb, the fastest stop I'd ever felt. Both thighs smacked the handlebars when I flew off and somehow brought my hands to my head a split second before I smashed into the massive black billboard with two lines of white letters, "Your life will be better if you believe." Everything went dark, then someone said, "Oh shit, oh fucking shit, he's dead." I opened my eyes, my face in the mud. "Who?" Jeremy knelt beside me. "Man, are you okay?" I pushed myself up and wiped the dirt from my face. Felt kind of sick seeing the blood on my hand. "Maybe you should stay down. You hit that thing like a fucking cannonball." I moved my head side to side to make sure everything was working, and then got to my feet. The world was spinning, and I went back down. I was seeing double, but I didn't tell him, and said, "I'm all right." Jeremy helped me sit so I faced the sign, the fallen letters by my feet. Maybe he could tell my vision was all screwed up because he read it for me. "You better believe." Dead serious, Jeremy asked, "You sure you ain't him?"